Welcome to The Bonfire. I am your host, Morgan, aka Bon Diesel, and this is a podcast about video game news, reviews, rumors, and speculation. This week, I'll be covering the Xbox Partner Preview, Helldivers 2 Trips Up, The Division's 8-year anniversary, and much more. Before we get started, subscribe to the show on your favorite podcast platform and leave a review on Spotify or iTunes. All 5-star iTunes reviews will get read on air. On YouTube, please subscribe to the channel, hit the like button, and comment down below to help the show get noticed. Thank you to everyone who supports as patrons, YouTube members, and Twitch subscribers, and a special thanks to producer-level supporter Hassan. If you're interested in supporting this podcast, consider becoming a member on YouTube. Subscribing over at Twitch, especially with your free Prime sub, or joining my Patreon at the link in the description of the show. Lastly, be sure to jump into the YouTube comments, Discord, or use the Google form to send questions or topics for next week's episode, or to just send feedback. Links for all of those are in the description below. Gaming news, let's get into it. Starting off with Xbox, they had an Xbox Partner Preview. I'm going to be straight up. Some of these games looked really cool, but I half watched this and I don't have anything to really say about it, but I figured I had to mention it on the show. This was exactly what was expected, though. I saw some people being weird about it and that there was some expectation that they would have some big reveal or like a shadow drop or something. That just isn't going to happen every time. They almost spoiled the well a little bit with Hi-Fi Rush. Even though that was like a first party reveal, but now people always expect that. And I think that's why some publishers and stuff like that are kind of hesitant to do that. Not to mention that Hi-Fi Rush had been properly advertised and promoted, I actually think would have been an even bigger game last year than it was. But now it's going to be bigger than ever because you can play it on your PlayStation fairly soon. In a Xbox-related story, the Fallout show on Amazon Prime had its final trailer. I believe the final trailer before it releases in mid-April in about 1 month. And it looked freaking crazy good. It looked so, so good. I was genuinely blown away. The last trailer they showed, I didn't think really looked that good. It had moments like the power armor looked great, but it kind of looked cheap a little bit. And what I'm assuming is this trailer is probably showing footage from some of the final cuts of the show that's actually going to release. And I would guess that the previous trailer we saw was probably less finished versions of the show. It looks so good. The Brotherhood of Steel, like blimp carrier thing looks so good. The power armor looks awesome. Some people spotted the new California Republic soldiers in one of the shots, and they're fighting Brotherhood of Steel. I used to know everything about the Fallout lore, and so I need to dig into it again because those things are significant, I believe. Like, that's a big deal. I believe this game does take place sometime after New Vegas, I believe. And so we're kind of in that timeline, and it just looks so great. So it comes out on April 12th, and they're going to release all 8 episodes at once. I've seen some people upset about that because when these shows release all of their episodes at once, everyone binges them, or at least the people who talk about them, and then they talk about the show for a week or two, and then you never talk about it again until there's a new season. Which hopefully this will get, you know, if it's as good as it looks. And then, you know, so even though people love to binge, it seems like there's a lot of people who prefer if they still release it weekly. I actually like it when they release like 2 or 3 episodes and then do it weekly. So you can binge it, you get kind of hooked, and then you come back. So, but this is great. It was just a story a week or two ago that one of the producers on this Fallout show said, like, this is basically Fallout 5, at least in some capacity, which makes sense. I get what they're saying. I think it may be a bit of a large statement to say that, But I think what they're getting at is, you know, it's going to be a long time, I think, before we get any official Fallout gaming related stuff. And so if you're looking for new Fallout stories, I think it's really likely that this show is going to be the bulk of it for quite a while. So it looks like it's going to be great, though. What I really liked about it is kind of something that the games do well also, is it looks like it's going to show how pristine and idyllic at least this vault is that this person's going to come from, that our protagonist is going to come from, and showing like kind of her naivete going out into this world, this destroyed world. And what I like about even the trailer is at the beginning of the trailer, it shows her walking around in this like pristine blue and yellow vault outfit with a little backpack, and she's checking out the world. And then by the end of the trailer, her suit's all ripped up. She's got like knee pads and shoulder and elbow pads, and she's kind of bloodied up from, I'm assuming, some kind of conflict or fight. And I think it's going to be fun to see that, because they do that so well in the games where they've shown us this like, wow, life is so easy here. Now, at least in some of the earlier ones, in Fallout 4, it doesn't really go that way. But yeah, I it looks great. I'm so excited for that. I'm really, and I'm going to try to get my wife to watch it, because I want to get the perspective of someone who doesn't know anything about Fallout and kind of see how that show hits someone like that. So I'll talk about that more next month when it comes out, and maybe we can get real crazy and have her on for a segment to talk about the Fallout, the show, and what she thought of it from a layman's point of view. For PlayStation, the big story this week was Helldivers 2, in one way, because they've kind of tripped up for the first time. They angered the community quite a bit with a big patch that they did, a balancing patch that it seems like the biggest annoyance was that they made everyone pretty squishy, a lot easier to kill. There were some changes to guns and stuff like that that people didn't love, but it seemed like the quicker time, you know, time to kill or time to die, you know, upset a lot of people and took away some of the fun. But then as of today, I'm recording this on Friday, March 8th, it appears that they have unlocked the mechs, the personal mechs that you can drive around that have like a chain gun and a rocket launcher. And what's cool about this, and it's one of the cool things about this game, this wasn't like a DLC, or they didn't say like, hey, in 5 days, we're going to release this update. They locked it behind a planet. And so they said like, hey, there's this planet that has the manufacturing facility for these mechs, but it's getting invaded by the, I think it was the robots. So you need to take back that planet to get those robots. And so if you take it back, you get them. But if you lose that planet, we lose the robots. And I'm really curious how that's going to play out. And if over time they're going to do something where like, you know, in a week or two, they're going to say, hey, there's another offensive happening on that planet. So you guys are used to having those robots for the last 2 weeks. Well, everyone better focus on that planet if you want to keep those robots to keep your personal mech. And I think they're going to do that with a lot of things. And what's going to be interesting is once they roll that out to, you know, half a dozen or a dozen planets where you have all these upgrades that you want, but then, you know, what's going to happen when they start attacking all those planets? The way that they're doing this thing where they're doing kind of like a living universe where they're constantly adjusting how things are going just to shift the focus of the players to where they want it is really cool. And it's something that I bet every live service game dev or you know, person in charge of a live service game, partly is probably like, wow, that's amazing that they're doing that. And then the other half of them is probably like, y'all are crazy. So, but yeah, good for Helldivers. I think they've already patched the game again, or at least they're planning to address some of the concerns. I mean, the game was bound to trip up eventually. Its player numbers are going to drop at some point, but I think it's going to stay pretty strong for a while, especially if, you know, this was a good first step for a live service game to do this mech thing, but they've got to keep going. They have to keep putting out stuff. Because every live service games, whether they released in crappy shape, which most of them do, or they released in really good shape, like my example would be The Division 2, was great on launch. It had a full campaign. He had a decent end game. It was great. but people still burn through that stuff really fast. And if your goal, you know, if you're not going to put out new content for a game for 6 months or a year, a live service game, you're going to lose players and you're going to lose that rush, even if your game releases well, because players basically want an amount of content that is theoretically impossible to keep up with from these games. But it looks like Helldivers 2 has taken a fun angle on it, and it seems like, you know, at least so far, besides a few little missteps, they're doing a pretty good job. Going over to Nintendo, Nintendo sued Yuzu, the maker of a Switch emulator that was estimated to have had over 1 million downloads of Tears of the Kingdom before it even came out. People playing that game on their PCs at a good frame rate and resolution. I know that seems wild to Nintendo, that they don't even know what those words mean. Well, they sued them, and they settled. Yuzu settled. They agreed to pay $2.4 million USD, so whatever the equivalent in Japan is. I believe the lawsuit was handled there. And they agreed to take down the emulators, obviously. It's interesting because this probably is going to at least push emulation and stuff a little more underground. Emulation, even of Nintendo products, has become, I would almost call it mainstream. I mean, it's not really, but you don't have to be too deep in the tech world to find people who are emulating pretty regularly. And while you know, for the health of the industry, you hope that these people are emulating games that they actually own, that it's just more of a preservation or a quality of life thing. You know, obviously a lot of these people are just stealing the games as well. So it's an interesting shot across the bow by Nintendo to basically say, like, yeah, if you do this stuff and if you get too cocky about it, we'll come after you. And that's what happened with Yuzu. There's a lot of, you know, free-to-play emulators and emulators who are kind of skirting the boundaries, where Yuzu had a Patreon and they were being pretty brash about what they were doing, and they've paid for it, literally. So we'll see how that impacts that world moving forward. For non-gaming platform stories, the first one I have here is Respawn is working on a game in the Titanfall and Apex universe, but it is not Titanfall 3. This comes on the heels of the layoffs that EA had, as well as news that Respawn was canceling a first-person Star Wars game that was rumored to be a Mandalorian game. We talked about that last week, I believe. So this is interesting. I kind of wonder if the people from that team who are working on that Star Wars game will be moving over to whatever this project is. It is interesting that they're being, you know, it's been made very clear that this is not Titanfall 3. I will throw out there that this rumor came from Jeff Grubb. And if you actually go look at what he said, I get that he's vague about these rumors and these leaks and stuff, because he wants to protect the people who give him this info, and maybe they don't really give him that much, but he's gotten very creative with how he talks about this stuff, and that he kind of just talks in circles. I think that as well as any leak or, you know, information like this, take it with a grain of salt until you see something. I think it's very smart for people to be a little weary, especially from sources who are part of, like, entertainment groups like Giant Bomb, where this isn't like he's reporting on IGN or you know, Game Industry News, or, you know, one of the, you know, journalist websites. He's kind of throwing this out on his little personal podcast or the morning podcast he does. There's just a different level of scrutiny there. So we'll see how this goes in the long run. For all we know, this game will get canceled and we'll never hear more about it. And then they'll work on Titanfall 3, maybe. Just to reiterate, though, there were those rumors that there was a Titanfall 3 at one point, and it was going to be a roguelike kind of game, like Hades. There were some people who got real, real up on that. That sounded awful to me, by the way. I don't need them to do something silly like that. Just, you know, give me Titanfall 3. Give me a, you know, 5 to 10 hour really solid campaign that's a lot of fun and pushes the story forward and deepens the lore of that universe and all of that. And then give me some awesome multiplayer. we'll just, I don't know if that's ever going to happen. I know Titanfall 2, it is one of, if not the best first-person shooter stories of all time. Both of those games, but especially 2, just the movement mechanics and the combat and everything about them, it's so cool. It's amazing. I just wonder if the performance of the first two games is going to make EA too shy to ever do it again, even though it seems like there's a bigger audience for it now. But then, you know, Titanfall 3 comes out and it sells like 2 million copies. You know, I don't know. We'll see. Dragon's Dogma 2 is coming out here in a couple weeks, and they have released their character creator on Steam. I jumped into this. It's really neat. It's basically its own little app where you go on and you make, I think it's up to like 6 characters you can make that you'll play as. You'll pick one as your main protagonist. And then the way this game works is it has these summons that I believe the way it's going to work is one of them will be permanent, and then you can recruit other ones, as well as real, you know, people that you can also have in your crew. And you can design one of these summons or one of these. There's a word for it, and of course I can't remember, even though I was just looking at it. It's really cool. It looks great. It's funny because it's like there's so many options to customize your character. There's almost like too many. And I think it's kind of interesting how I think there's definitely a sweet spot when it comes to character customization, and that, you know, being able to control literally every single aspect of the way your character looks sometimes makes them all look kind of bad. And that's what I've noticed with this thing, but it's still really cool. And I've already seen some fan creations that are hilarious. Someone made, it was like Kratos, like dead on, looked just like him. So you'll see some pretty interesting characters being represented in this Dragon's Dogma game. Hot on the heels of Baldur's Gate 3, I really think Dragon's Dogma 2 could very well be kind of the Baldur's Gate 3 of this year. It's a very different situation. You know, it's a AAA studio coming out from under Capcom, who's been just hitting bangers like crazy lately. So, you know, it's not exactly the same, but I definitely could see, I think people's appetite is there for this type of game. And I think you're going to see, especially people who maybe like me, who love Baldur's Gate 3, but maybe don't love the turn-based combat. Well, that's Dragon's Dogma 2 is going to be that like more action, you know, style game, but it's going to have the conversations and the choices that matter and the RPG stuff and all of that. So, you know, for people who maybe really liked Baldur's Gate 3, but wanted something a little more action packed, it's probably Dragon's Dogma 2. And that's why if it comes out in decent shape, and the reviews are good, I wouldn't be surprised at all if this game gets pretty big. So we'll have to wait and see. In our bizarre move of the week, Warner Brothers came out and talked about how they are going to shift away from one-and-done AAA games and are going to lean more into live service games. The reason this is funny, for many of us at least, is because they, in 2023, released a single-player, technically one-and-done game in Hogwarts Legacy, I believe it was. And it was the highest selling game of the year over a Call of Duty game. It sold, I believe, over 25 million copies, which is wild. And that's the kind of game they want to get away from. And then the kind of game they want to go towards is like their now infamous Suicide Squad Kill the Justice League game, which has came out and flopped them basically immediately. I believe the last look is it only had maybe a few hundred players on it. And that's the kind of game they're going to lean towards. So, like, I get it. I get why these publishers and are doing this stuff. I don't agree with it. But, like, the one question I did bring up is how profitable Hogwarts was. Like, yeah, it sold 25 million copies or whatever, you know, how many ever copies. But, like, I don't know what the licensing deals are there. Like, I don't know what kind of cut they get. Because, say, they sell that on PlayStation, which is where I think it was especially popular. PlayStation takes a 30% cut right there. And I don't know what kind of cut the Harry Potter license is taken out of that. I bet it's pretty substantial. And then to say they take a 20% cut or more Well, that leaves, that studio or that publisher with 40, 50% of the sales coming to them. But then you have to count, you have to count development costs. So there's, you have to, that's at least half of that money, if not more. And then it turns into maybe they sold a ton of copies and it was a pretty well reviewed game, but it wasn't really all that profitable. And that's why they're getting away from it. I'm not defending their process here, but I'm just saying that there's probably a reason. There is a world. I don't know how many games, I don't know how many copies Suicide Squad is going to sell, but there's a world where they make more money off Suicide Squad than Harry Potter. Probably not, but it would be easier than we probably think. So this seems weird. This reminds me a lot of where EA was years ago. Now EA seems to be kind of doing both, kind of letting the single player one and done games happen like Jedi Survivor, while also still pushing their live service stuff, which is, the Battlefields, all of their sports games, Apex, things like that. Even though Apex, I think, is kind of on a downward spiral. Weird stuff, but not that surprising, unfortunately or fortunately, depending on how you look at it. In another story, 5 minutes of a canceled Time Splitters game was found on a discarded dev kit. The only reason I really bring this up, I could care less about Time Splitters. The Reddit thread I saw about this was just like, I'm not a game dev. I don't really know anything about game dev. I think I know more than most people, simply because of conversations and things I'm involved in. But I will not pretend that I understand game dev, right? But some of the takes I saw in one of the threads where this footage was posted was just hilarious. Just people being like, oh, this looks like crap. It's just a Fortnite clone, blah, blah, blah. It's literally pre-alpha footage, and it looks like very early pre-alpha footage. And yeah, the animations aren't finished. There's no textures on half the stuff in the game. Everything looks janky. But that's what pre-alpha games look like. I've played my handful of AAA pre-alpha games, and it is hilarious what these games look like. And I really don't think people realize how much, or at least in the experience I've had, that the last couple months, the last few months, or maybe the last year of development on a game is like a lot of polish. So if you see a game anytime before that, if you get to play an alpha or a beta of a game before it's even like in that polish stage, it won't look like a real game almost. So if we ever needed more proof of why gamers don't need to be giving their backseat advice, then that discourse was definitely part of it. Akira Toriyama, the creator of Dragon Ball and a bunch of other stuff, passed away at age 68 in this last week. Full disclosure, I'm not super into any of the stuff that Akira did, but the reaction I've seen from people that I follow and respect a lot has been so substantial that I can't not mention it. It sounds like this person, I'm aware of a lot of the things they did, I'm just not super into them. But respect is due where it's due still. So, thoughts to his family and to all the people around that individual. That sucks. So moving on to Baldur's Gate 3, my kind of long-term thoughts. So I am in the middle of my fourth playthrough. And so here's the thing about Baldur's Gate. And anyone who's listening who's played understands it. I've probably started Baldur's Gate 3 like 15 or 20 times. I've finished it 3 times, and I'm on my fourth playthrough now. The first two playthroughs I did right when the game came out. The last one and the current one I've done here in the last month or two. And it's been interesting because in the multiple months in between, they did multiple really big patches. And you can tell the game, some things change. I actually don't prefer, but then there's so much more new stuff in there. Some things work different than they did in a better way for the most part. It's great. It's such a good game. Like I could see after this playthrough needing to take another pretty substantial break for them to add more content or to fix some things or to just clear my mind and play something else for a while. But man, it just being in that world is fun. The one consistent thing I've noticed though is I enjoy Act 1 every time. Act 2 is cool. The funny thing is about Baldur's Gate 3 is that it's a really long game if you want it to be. But I've definitely been able to tell that after 3-4 playthroughs, I know where everything is. And I'm not really skipping much content, if any. But I know where stuff is. So, you know, and I remember that when I'm at the bog and I open up this container, I need to keep that one thing because that's going to help me get past something later faster, which I didn't learn for 2 or 3 playthroughs, right? So yeah, but the problem is that I get through Act 1, love it. Act 2, it's perfectly fine, perfectly good. And then Act 3, there's so much stuff to do that there's too much. And by then, I'm kind of tired. I'm kind of just curious to see what the end looks like because there's, you know, a decent number of different endings you can get. And I've noticed that in all 3 and now 4 of my playthroughs, I get to Act 3, I knock out a few of the busy stuff, and then I just mainline it and do all the Golden Path stuff, and then I'm out. Especially when I hit level cap at level 12. Once you do that, it really does like kind of lose the luster. I understand why they cap it there, because I believe that in D&D, once you're past level 12, you're getting into like demigod and like god territory when you get to up to like, I think it's level 20 is the max, or I guess it could be as high as they want it to be. But so it's kind of a shame. So I know if I do another playthrough, that you have like custom difficulties. And I want to see if there's a way for me to like make the progression, you know, a decent amount slower, because it just seems too fast. But man, Baldur's Gate 3 is so great. It's just such a wildly good game that it's not perfect. I still see people kind of having that attitude of like, you know, Baldur's Gate's crap doesn't stink. It definitely does. Like, the game has lots of problems still. But man, it gets past those pretty well. We did get a question from MasterPrime 901 that kind of fits into this topic. It's, what would you like to see in a hypothetical Baldur's Gate 4? I would like to see some kind of direct sequel to 3. They have a penchant for previous characters showing up in the next game. Baldur's Gate 3 has a lot of characters from 1 and 2. Now, that may be kind of an homage to the first 2 games who were made by BioWare. It's still really cool. I think Baldur's Gate 4 will be interesting if they ever do it, because the expectation for that game is just going to be just wild. Like, the expectations for the next any Larian project is going to be so insane that I kind of fear for them, because it's one of those things where I almost don't think that they can meet the expectations that I think people have. I could be wrong. I hope I'm wrong. And I probably will be. We can go with that. But I'm still really curious to what they do. Like, I would just kill for them to do a like Star Wars game, or I've even had like little dreams of like an isometric, or like, you know, that style of like a Mass Effect game, or like The Division and things like that. Like, you know, that they're gonna, I have to imagine, in a time where there isn't a lot of support for new games and stuff like that from publishers and such, they've got to be having their doors getting knocked down by publishers and IP rights holders and stuff like that to make a game under a different license. But then Baldur's Gate's been so wildly successful, you know, how do they not make a fourth one, right? Like, are they dumb to not go straight to that? I don't know. That's not my part of the business. So thank you for the question, Master Prime. And it's a pretty vague answer, but it's definitely, I think just kind of more of the same is probably my best answer. Then the final story today, we have The Division 1 released 8 years ago. The Division is the reason I make content. This very podcast started off as a podcast called The Echo Cast, and it was focused on The Division. An echo is a kind of digital recording that was really important in that game for storytelling purposes. And, you know, I recorded over 100 episodes as a Division focused podcast. Then after The Division 2 came out about a year later, I think I switched the podcast to a more general podcast, then renamed it last year. to something less specific to a certain franchise. But man, The Division has such a big place in my heart. It's the reason I started making content, podcast, streaming, everything. I got to go to E3 in 2018, not knowing that that was, for all intents and purposes, the last one, because I kind of heard 19 was not as good. I got to meet a bunch of AAA game devs, a handful of people who I still talk to extremely often, about all kinds of stuff. You know, I got to meet other creators, for better or worse, in some ways. But you know, and it's you know, a pretty big part of what I do today and what I've been doing for 7-8 years. So I'm always going to remember The Division for that. When it comes to the actual games, the first game was just such a cool, unique experience, even if it was pretty flawed. The second game I really like more than the first one in almost every way, but I also understand why, you know, not everyone agrees. But it's such a cool game. I am kind of done with it, though. I'm definitely way more excited for the next game than I am about the, you know, the little bits of story and stuff they've been dropping. But you know, I still appreciate it. I still really love what they're doing over there at Massive, especially with a relatively small team still working on The Division 2. It's such a great series. The second game has been so big for me, and I think they had such a good release. And the content that they released post-launch, I think, has been kind of up and down, and mostly down for the most part. But they've still had some cool moments, and they keep supporting the game. I don't particularly love the content they've put out for it late in its lifetime here, but I still respect that they're doing it, because my impression is that the team doing it is, you know, what you would describe as minuscule. They are doing a lot with a little, so good for them on that part at least. And then the future of the franchise, I imagine Heartland is the next game that comes out. I don't care about that resurgence mobile game. I could care less. That is off my radar, basically. But Heartland, which I can't really talk about, I am curious to see what happens with that. I've seen some people talking about, like, oh, I think The Division 3 is going to be out, like, this year or next year. And I think people need to realize that they probably aren't even working on that game in any significant way yet. I think The Division 3 is at least 2 or 3 years away. The bulk of the team that I believe is going to work on The Division 3 is working on the Star Wars game right now, Outlaws. I'm assuming that's coming out this spring or summer. You know, they're obviously going to keep a decent chunk of the team behind for bug fixing, DLC, things like that, if they're going to have it. And then they'll start working on The Division 3. And so, you know, you're looking at maybe at the beginning of 25, they start working on Division 3. And depending on how different or big it is, that, you know, that could be 2, 3, 4, 5 years away. So, you know, maybe next gen of the consoles, we'll be looking at Division 3 as a launch title for somebody. And that's going to launch me off of this podcast as I wrap it up. Fairly short show today, but there really wasn't anything gigantic I wanted to really dig into this week, but I still did want to record. So, you know, once again, thank you so much for listening to the show, checking out all of the episodes and all of my other content as well. Please consider participating in the show by submitting a question or comment in the Discord or on the show's Google form. You can find those in the links or in the link of the description of the show. You can find me all over the internet as Bond Diesel, including over on Twitch, where I stream here and there, and YouTube, where I post stuff all the time. You can see my other content or find ways to support everything I do by checking out the Linktree link in the description of the show. That is all I have for this one. So until next time.